Do you like the Tales from the Crypt? Do you love the Tales from the Crypt? Even if you've never seen an episode, this podcast is for you. I'm Melissa, your ghostess with the mostest, and host of the Good Evening Kitties podcast. Each week, I break down another great episode from the TV series The Tales from the Crypt. Audio clips are included, so even if you haven't watched that episode, you're good to go. There are also special guests, trivia, mini movie reviews, and much more. What are you waiting for? Check out the Good Evening Kitties podcast on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's the Good Evening Kitties podcast. Check it out today.
710 Dyerson Lake. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by BunnySlippers.com and FoundItemClothing.com. Hey, Australia, New Zealand, or anywhere that is Chile right now. Keep your feet warm and cute this winter with some Cthulhu slippers from BunnySlippers.com. And get your favorite screen-accurate shirts from your favorite films from FoundItemClothing.com. Written and edited by Daniel Spitzer. Audio by Sarah Fee and Daniel Spitzer. Music by Kevin MacLeod. PGTTCM is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Learn more at darkmyths.org. Welcome to the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. We are engaged in an ongoing discussion of the Cthulhu Mythos and its timeline regarding Earth. To be part of it, contact us at pgttcm@gmail.com or join us on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for PGTTCM. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe to PGTTCM on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Click our Patreon button on pgttcm.podbean.com, donate a dollar or five, or donate a few dollars to paypal.me/pgttcm. Message us to find out where to send a self-addressed stamped envelope to receive stickers.
I believe that's pronounced envelope.
Oh, excuse me, envelope. Greetings, listeners. It is we, D.B. Spitzer and Sarah Fee, here to talk to you once again about the Cthulhu mythos, its books, its monsters, its unfortunate human casualties, its timeline in general, and even its tangential bits, like the dreamlands or things of a weird nature or things that are Lovecraftian leaning. From the creation of our galaxy to the death of our sun, this is an exploration of the Cthulhu mythos from the perspective of humanity's concept of history.
Learn of terrible things in lonely places, of cyclopean ruins, in which vast staircases lead down to abysses of nighted secret, of complex angles that lead through invisible walls to regions of time and space, and of hideous explorations in remote and forbidden places, on other worlds, and in different time-space continua.
Check out the show's merch table at pgttcm.threadless.com. You can find lots of cool shirts and mugs and stuff there, all original designs by D.B. Spitzer, or check out the store link on pgttcm.com. Remember to check out the books we review on Amazon.com, and why not use our Amazon link and look for the Strange Behaviors anthology by Nihilism Revisited, and look for the micro story by D.B. Spitzer.
The People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos starts now. Yay. So, hey.
Hey.
We're recording.
Yes, we are.
Second to last episode of the season.
Oh, my gosh.
Totally out of order,
right?
Due to life.
Yeah, well, you know, it takes time to listen to the Mountains of Madness.
And to read stuff and to go over things.
It's true, it's
watch
true.
The Thug Notes version,
right,
of At the
Mountains
of Madness,
which is hilarious.
In case you never got around to
yeah.
reading it or listening to the audio drama.
Oh, man. Morgan Scorpion does such a good job reading At the Mountains of Madness, too. I really enjoyed our reading episodes on that.
Yeah.
Or I guess it was just one episode.
It was one episode. I should have broken it up a little bit, but.
Yeah. Well, especially since you did three episodes for The Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah. So. Well, it's you know, I kind of learned my lesson with At the Mountains of Madness, because that was a big one. And every once in a while, I'll release one. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. that's 4 hours. That's an audio hike.
I would call it more of a backpacking expedition, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm currently editing up together, digging through the public domain, looking for mm-hmm. stuff. Found the Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it all one reader or is it different?
It's
ones?
All one reader.
Ooh, wow, that's dedication.
Yeah, yeah. So it's and I'd edited a whole bunch of it together, and I was like, oh yeah, this isn't too bad at all. And then I listened to it, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's not the whole book. And then I find out that it's like not the whole thing online. So had to go and search, and then I found the other half of it.
Oh, good.
And luckily, it was still in the public domain.
Nice.
So sometimes I'll find stuff and I'll be really excited about it, and then I'll find like, oh yeah, no, part of this isn't in the public domain because it used something that they didn't have rights to. And it's like,
right.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's going to be really fun to listen to the Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath during the interim, the break between our seasons.
Sure.
Which is coming right up.
Yep.
Because this episode is the penultimate episode, right?
Penultimate.
Yes.
Series 7.
Series 7. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, let's get to this this expedition, this trek, these guys. We're going to be talking about the Lake Endyar expedition.
So, have you read The Endurance by Alfred Lansing?
No, I have not.
Oh, well. It's a really cool book. It's the whole title is The Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Journey.
Yes.
And it's about the Shackleton expedition to the South Pole.
Oh.
In which a lot of people die. I think it might have been everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, like, if you make it down to Antarctica, you can, like, go visit the hovel that they made because stuff is, like, preserved really well down there. You know, because it's frozen.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's kind of an amazing... they kept logs and stuff, and I think what happened is that they kept logs and diaries, and then somebody compiled them all and I think also included like newspaper articles.
Sure.
And it's from the same time period as the Mountains of Madness.
Yeah.
Maybe a little before. But it's a really cool companion thing because, you know, you get more of like a feel for how accurate H.P. Lovecraft, ever hear of the guy, was about the idea of what an Arctic exploration would be like in that time period.
Okay, so one thing I always like to really state is the fact that H.P. Lovecraft was enamored with technology and I believe was definitely a subscriber or at least had access to popular science and news in general and would have found the Arctic expedition fascinating. And I believe
Antarctic.
I believe actually like was inspired by Antarctic expedition for this. I mean, that's where he got the idea for.
Yeah. So I think it's been a while since I read The Endurance, but I think that it was part of the race to the South Pole.
Yeah.
You know, the Norwegians won because they know how to deal with snow.
Yeah.
Unlike English people.
Well, yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of it, but it was a really, it's a kind of an amazing book and a kind of a really sad book too.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about H.P. Lovecraft's interpretation of what it would be like to go to Antarctica and discover the Elder Things. The Lake Endyar Expedition. The story is recalled in a first-person perspective by the geologist William Dyer, a professor at Arkham's Miskatonic University, in the hope to prevent an important and much-publicized scientific expedition to Antarctica. And throughout the course of his explanation, Dyer relates how he led a group of scholars from Miskatonic University on a previous expedition to Antarctica, during which they discovered ancient ruins and a dangerous secret beyond a range of mountains higher than the Himalayas. A small advance group led by Professor Lake discovers the remains of 14 prehistoric life forms, previously unknown to science, and also unidentifiable as either plants or animals. 6 of the specimens have been badly damaged, while another 8 have been preserved in pristine condition. The specimens' stratum places them far too early on the geologic timescale for the features of the specimens to have evolved. When the main expedition loses contact with Lake's party, Dyer and his colleagues investigate. Lake's camp is devastated, with the majority of men and dogs slaughtered, while a man named Gedney and one of the dogs are absent. Near the expedition's campsite, they find 6 star-shaped snow mounds with 1 specimen under each. They also discover that the better-preserved life forms have vanished, and that some form of dissection experiment has been done on both an unnamed man and a dog. The missing man is suspected of having gone utterly insane and having killed and mutilated all the others. Dyer and a graduate student named Danforth fly an aeroplane across the mountains, which they identify as the outer walls of a vast abandoned stone city, alien to any human architecture. For their resemblance to creatures of myth mentioned in the Necronomicon, the builders of the lost civilization are dubbed the Elder Things. By exploring these fantastic structures, the men learn through hieroglyphic murals that the Elder Things first came to Earth shortly after the moon took form and built their cities with the help of Shoggoths, biological entities created to perform any task, assume any form, and reflect any thought. There is a hint that all earthly life evolved from cellular material left over from the creation of the Shoggoths. As more buildings are explored, the explorers learn about the Elder Things' conflict with both the star spawn of Cthulhu and the Migo, who arrived on Earth shortly afterwards. The images also reflect a degeneration of their civilization once the Shoggoths gain independence. As more resources are applied in maintaining order, the etchings become haphazard and primitive. The murals also allude to an unnamed evil lurking within an even larger mountain range located beyond the city. This mountain range rose in one night, and certain phenomena and incidents deter the Elder Things from exploring it. When Antarctica became uninhabitable, even for the Elder Things, they soon migrated into a large subterranean ocean. Dyer and Danforth eventually realized that the Elder Things, missing from the advance party's camp, had somehow returned to life and, after slaughtering the explorers, have returned to their city. Dyer and Danforth also discover traces of the Elder Things' earlier explorations, as well as sleds containing the corpses of both Gedney and his missing dog. They are ultimately drawn towards the entrance of a tunnel into the subterranean region depicted in the murals. Here, they find evidence of various Elder Things killed in a brutal struggle and blind 6-foot-tall penguins wandering placidly, apparently used as livestock. They are then confronted by a black, bubbling mass, which they identify as a Shoggoth, and escape. Aboard the plane, high above the plateau, Danforth looks back and sees something which causes him to lose his sanity, implied to be the unnamed evil itself. Dyer concludes that the Elder Things slaughtered the survivors and dogs only out of self-defense or scientific curiosity, that their civilization was eventually destroyed by the Shoggoths, and that this further entity has preyed on the enormous penguins. He warns the planners of the next proposed Antarctic expedition to stay distant from the site.
It is absolutely necessary for the peace and safety of mankind that some of Earth's dark, dead corners and unplumbed depths be left alone, lest sleeping abnormalities wake to resurgent life, and blasphemously surviving nightmares squirm and splash out of their black layers to newer and wider conquests.
At the Mountains of Madness has numerous connections to other Lovecraft stories. A few include the formless Shoggoths, later appeared in The Shadow over Innsmouth, 1931, The Thing on the Doorstep, 1933, The Haunter of the Dark, 1935. The star-headed Elder Things also appear in The Dreams in the Witch House, 1933, when the main character Walter Gilman visits a city of theirs in one of his dreams, and The Shadow Out of Time, in which an Elder Thing is kept as a fellow prisoner. The expedition is sponsored by the Nathaniel Derby Pickman Foundation, combining 2 major names in Lovecraft's fiction, Derby and Pickman. Richard Upton Pickman is the main character in Lovecraft's Pickman's Model, while Edward Pickman Derby is the protagonist of his The Thing on the Doorstep, and also one of his literary alter egos. The Elder Things record the coming of Cthulhu to Earth and the sinking of Relay, events referred to in The Call of Cthulhu. The Elder Things city is identified with the Plateau of Lang, first mentioned in Lovecraft's Zelephias, 1920. Some members of the expedition have read Miskatonic University's copy of the Necronomicon. Dyer mentions Kadath of the Cold Wastes while referring to a massive mountain range, which even the Elder Things shunned as vaguely and namelessly evil. At the very end of the story, Danforth links the horror beyond the Forbidden Mountain Range to Yog-Sothoth and the Color Out of Space. The Migo are the focus of The Whisper in Darkness. Several times throughout, Dyer also makes reference to Albert Wilmarth, the main character of The Whisper in Darkness.
I could not help feeling that they were evil things, mountains of madness, whose further slopes looked out over some accursed ultimate abyss. That seething, half-luminous cloud background held ineffable suggestions of a vague, ethereal beyondness, far more than terrestrially spatial, and gave appalling reminders of the utterly remoteless separateness, desolation, and eon-long death of this untrodden, unfathomed, austral world.
William Dyer. Dyer, the narrator of the story, is a professor emeritus of geology at Miskatonic University. He was about 50 years old when he became one of the leaders of the Miskatonic University expedition to Antarctica in 1930. At the Mountains of Madness only mentions his surname, but he is fully identified as a later Lovecraft novella, The Shadow Out of Time, 1936. In that work, Dyer takes part in an expedition to the Great Sandy Desert in Australia. Professor Lake. Lake is a professor of biology at Miskatonic University. It is he who first discovers the Mountains of Madness as a result of his strange and dogged insistence on a westward, or rather northwestward, prospecting trip, based on his discovery of strange fossils. He also discovers the ancient extraterrestrial specimens that he dubs Elder Things, based on their resemblance to certain monsters of primal myth found in the Necronomicon. He reports that his findings in Antarctica confirm his beliefs that Earth has seen whole cycles of organic life before the known one that begins with archaeozoic cells, and predicts that this will mean to biology what Einstein has meant to mathematics and physics. When 8 of the Elder Things turn out to be living creatures rather than fossils, they butcher Lake and the rest of his sub-expedition. For the rest of the story, Lake is referred to as Poor Lake.
Poor Lake.
A poor Lake.
Yeah, so that's the Lake and Dyer expedition, a.k.a. Yes. At the Mountains of Madness.
At the Mountains of Madness. Now, I mean, so like some of the descriptions of the Mountains of Madness make it, I mean, okay, so I think that there's like layers of where this name comes from.
Yeah.
Because we're dealing with two different mountain ranges. One is a mountain range that's holding in some like deeper darkness that we is only hinted at. Uh-huh. Then the mountains that like Lake is at are these squared off weird things that have passages and turns out to be like the walls of a city.
Yeah.
And like squared off mountains are mad anyway. That's just not a shape mountains would have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, as a geologist, Dyer should know that.
Yeah, that's madness.
Yeah, those madness. Mountains. Totally mad.
Yeah. So, beyond the name, At the Mountains of Madness, that's one of my favorite Lovecraft stories.
Yeah.
It's a whole story. It has a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, it's it doesn't end on a weird place. It totally has like a reason for existing. I like the very typical Lovecraftian trope of I only am telling you this because it's under duress. I would rather keep this to myself, but I feel that I must say it. And he says this over and over again in the story where he's like, yet again, we have come to a part where I must force myself to use description. I'm like, Lovecraft never forced himself to use description.
Yeah.
Like that's just part of his writing.
It's like, let me go grab a thesaurus, people.
I'm going to make this so descriptive.
I'm going to make this so descriptive, you're going to be like, wow, HP, that was the best, man. And I'll be like, yeah, dude. And then we'll be like, yeah.
Yeah.
H.P. Lovecraft, Clark Ashton Smith. No.
Right? Oh, totally. So, just like, how many adjectives can you fit in a sentence? Ooh. Yeah. So, speaking of many adjectives in a sentence.
Many adjectives in a sentence.
Shall we go into the book review?
No, I thought we were going to talk about At the Mountains of Madness a little bit more.
Yeah, let's talk about At the Mountains of Madness some
Then we'll talk about your book review for Tim E. Less by Lucas Milliron.
Lucas Milliron.
Yeah. Who was the sponsor for the last couple of months.
Yes.
For People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. Yeah. And you can pick up his book, Tim E. Less, for about $13 on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
99 cents on the Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about that yet.
Not yet.
We should talk about two things that I want to talk about or want to know your opinion about. One, the first thing.
Uh-huh.
Shoggoths, or as they say on Thug
Nuts. Shoggoths.
Shoggoths.
Oh, Shoggoths, yes.
Because of Shoggoths, earthly life evolved from what was left over. That's one thing I want to talk about.
Yeah.
The other thing is... So how do these elder things, these star-shaped five, five-sided creatures, how did they do stuff? I don't get how
they
did
stuff. Apparently
they
had a lot of tentacles.
Yeah, but...
Tentacled appendages. I mean, like, the way that they describe the hands and feet seems like it's like a kind of a claw with tentacles around it.
Yeah.
Right? So.
But the only thing I can imagine them is like... Like, either, like, crawling like a claw or, like, spinning as they move.
Maybe. I mean, if you have five eyes on five faces of your body, there's no reason you shouldn't spin as you move.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we have two eyes on the front of our bodies, and so we have binocular vision. Mm-hmm. We also don't have 360-degree views. We cannot see even basically... very much out to the side of us. You know, peripheral vision is limited. So, like, that's why spinning makes us dizzy.
Yeah.
You know, but if we had eyes all the way around or could see 360 and absorb that information, I don't see why you wouldn't spin as you move.
Okay. That seems like a reasonable explanation.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons that flies are so agile, is because they can see behind them.
Oh, I thought it was because they could fly.
Yeah, they can also fly. Okay, smarty.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on the fact that Shoggoths are...
Fact.
Are,
Fact.
Okay. The fact in this book.
Yes, okay, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. In the Cthulhu mythos,
right,
it's that a fact
that life that on Earth evolved
all
from
earthly life
leftover Shoggoths
from leftover slime monsters.
Well, so my feeling,
Tikalili, baby,
Tikalili for sure. So, one of the things that I found really interesting was the idea that the elder things had the ability to do this and then somehow lost that knowledge.
Yeah.
And, like, they could create a life form to do whatever they wanted. And then when they lost control, their society fell apart. What I wanted to say about that is, yeah, that's how it works when you have a slave-based society.
Yeah.
You know, you lose control of your slaves, and then guess what? All hell breaks loose.
Yep.
Because you don't actually have people who know how to do things when they don't have to. Like, that's where the degeneration actually comes from, is when you start relying on other... people, things to do the heavy lifting in a society.
Yeah.
Whether the Shoggoths, like, quote, rebelled or not. I mean, if they gave them any kind of intelligence, then it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Intelligence isn't useful in a slave.
So here's something interesting to think about. Think about the elder things as, colonists.
Yes.
Colonials.
Yeah.
And, they come over here,
yeah,
and they don't have anyone to...
Well, I mean, the Earth was empty of life at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, I guess we got to make some slaves.
Well, I mean, I guess they'd done that before in other places that they'd been. Like, this was something that was a part of their culture, was to make slaves for themselves. So And of course, you want an adaptable, malleable slave so they can do whatever you want them to do, right?
There was one being on the earth that they derived their material from.
Oh, what was it?
It was the great old one, Ubo Sathla.
Oh.
A Clark Ashton Smith deity.
Hmm. I didn't hear that part in the Mountains of Madness. Maybe I was
It's other stuff. This is more...
This is something that's gained from other sources?
Yeah, this is Cthulhu mythos. This is, Cthulhu mythos encyclopedia. I don't know if it's from the game or not, but it might be.
One of the things I wanted to say was those hieroglyphic murals were amazingly communicative.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about, like, different cultures. Like, even in... You know, like human pictures, it's really difficult to see what a mural is actually saying. That's part of, like, we don't know what petroglyphs, the oldest human art form, is actually doing besides looking like a mammoth or an antelope or whatever. We are humans, and it's a good idea to assume that modern humans, which we are and have been for thousands of years, had similar ways of thinking, even if they didn't have the same context.
Yeah, no, I've definitely seen petroglyphs in Arizona and been like, well, what the hell is a circle with an X through it mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I mean, we have an idea in our culture what that might mean, but what it might mean to a different culture is completely different. So the idea that somebody could wander down some halls and look at this other race's petroglyphs or, you know, hieroglyphic murals and understand anything about them, I find very suspect.
They might have been like, okay, maybe he didn't have a word for hologram.
Mm. Oh, maybe. I mean, like, because what was the one where he takes a telephone down into a grave?
Oh, that was...
that was amazing.
Oh, the Randolph
Carter. That was the rotting stone and...
Strange Case of Randolph Carter, something like that.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I can't remember the title 100%. It's Randolph Carter.
Yeah. It was, descriptions of future technologies back then is pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, were they maybe the hieroglyphic murals, maybe like TVs or something?
Yeah.
I mean, then you'd have a degeneration pretty quick of them being able to do things. Yeah, because movement is essential to, you know, like, showing what something is. I wonder if somebody from a different, like, culture altogether would understand what comic books say.
Yeah, no, they might not even recognize, like from a different world, they wouldn't even, like, recognize what we think of as, like, icons and iconography.
So, I'm sorry, to get back to Shoggoth being the originator of all life on Earth.
Yeah.
So one of the things that, one of the theories about where the life comes from on Earth, like in real science, is that perhaps an asteroid with like a generator cell crashed on Earth, and that's where life came from, you know, landed in our warm ocean and was like, ooh, this is a nice place to live.
Yeah.
And that's an idea. And there's another idea that, you know, just the raw ingredients in the right conditions will always produce a cell or two. And then, of course, like, you know, there was all this huge time of just cells, and then they learn to work together because cooperation is the key to larger life forms.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. Like, that's an interesting idea. Is the idea that it's like the shed cells of the Shoggoths, or like the leftover bits from making them, or the Shoggoths themselves?
I believe it was like the leftover bits of making them.
Like the scraps.
The scraps.
Interesting.
The scrapings.
Huh. In that case, I like the idea that the elder things brought that material with them better than that it came from some old one, great old one that was already on Earth.
Oh, yeah.
How many great old ones does Earth need on it anyway?
I don't know, but there's a lot. There's a lot.
What are we, like at the crossroads of history?
No. I think there's a lot everywhere. It's just that we happen to be at a point that can record them.
Oh.
Yeah. Or... Or, if we're going to be realistic, everyone who writes a damn mythos book has to create a great old one. It's like, oh, I'm writing a mythos story. Right? I just can't use a Lynn Carter deity or a Clark Ashton Smith deity or an H.P. Lovecraft deity. Mm-hmm. I got to create the unclean.
Is that a real one?
No.
We should write a story about him.
Yeah, the unclean.
Or
yeah.
her, maybe?
It.
It.
Yeah, it's got all the parts and extra parts.
Oh, yeah. All the parts and extra parts. I love it.
So up next, we're going to be talking about Tim E. Less by Lucas Milliron.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tim isn't a perfect man. He's just a guy struggling to provide for his family. No matter how hard he tries, it is all falling apart. When it looks like things can't get any worse, the accident happens. Tim can't remember a thing, only the sound of twisting metal, of the nightmares, and of coyotes stalking him through the halls of Stillwater Sanitarium. Follow Tim on his downward spiral through the asylum, through hell and back, as he uncovers the truth of what happened to his family. Tim E. Less is a disturbed horror thriller of insanity, chemical seduction, and true nightmares come to life. Silent Hill meets The Cell. Okay, so I'm only about halfway through this book.
Sure.
And I think I'm going to finish it, which is interesting.
Okay.
I would call it really... It has like a dreamlike quality, which I think is really interesting to read. It has so the first part of the book is like all about the character kind of coming to terms with being in the sanitarium, the asylum, kind of figuring out where he is and what he's doing. There's kind of like a couple of resets. There's an implication that he's come in as somebody else and now he's this other person. Like, he came in under the name Edwin, but now he wants everybody to call him Tim, and he doesn't remember what happened before. There's like a lot of like mystery, and I bet it gets answered in the second half of the book. So that happens for about a third of the book, and then this kind of complete off-the-rails thing happens. He discovers a door under his bed, like in the floor, and as he goes through it, gravity shifts and pulls him to the bottom of the corridor on the other side of the door, and then he walks down it and finds himself going up, so there's a grate at the end of the hall, and he finds himself looking up into another room. So, like, if you will, it's like two ends of a barbell, and each end of the barbell faces out, but the hallway has a gravitational pull down, if that makes any sense. I could draw a picture, but not on a podcast. So anyway, so he's basically in an upside down world that's underneath the asylum, but it has characters and geography in connection. And then underneath this asylum in the other world, there's the city of hell. It's kind of like this amazing journey that he goes on. It's very cinematographic. There's a lot of description, and the characters are engaging and also off-putting, but it is horror, so they're supposed to be. I kind of really want to find out what happened to his wife and kid. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I recall that you said that this book could use a little bit more editing.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but other than that, it could use some editing. And was there anything else that you had to say about it?
It's called Tim E. Less, but if you look at it, it looks like Timeless.
Oh, yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a clever title.
Yeah. And if you want to get it, but you're not sure if you want to pay $13, it is available on Kindle for 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is... brand new author,
Lucas Milliron. Yes.
So yeah, this is, I think, one of his first books.
Mm-hmm.
So help him out. And yeah, no, it sounds like this could be retooled into a much bigger, better project and just possibly needs like an edit or two. But it sounds like a really, really cool book from when you were telling me about the
It's an amazing
synopsis.
Concept.
Yeah.
It really is an amazing concept.
It sounds exactly like the description for the book that we use for the ad.
Right? Because it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Tim E. Less by Lucas Milliron, and mm-hmm. you can check him out on Amazon.
Woohoo! Yeah. Use our link.
Yeah, definitely. And so, oh, it's that time. Can you hear that special music? It's the time where we end up the show.
Oh, we're winding up the show.
Yeah, we're winding up the show.
Okay.
Because I'm out of water and my lips are starting to stick to my teeth.
No.
Yeah.
We can't be having smacking.
No. So, yeah, no. Thank you for joining us for our penultimate episode of Series 7.
Woohoo.
Lake and Dyer.
Yeah, the
Lake and Dyer. And Danforth, too.
Oh, my gosh. I know a Danforth.
Yeah. It's this guy. But yeah, no, thanks again for everyone for listening. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like it that you're our fans.
Yeah.
And that you like the show and that you like listening and that you like joining us on Facebook and Instagram.
Yes, it's so nice to hear from you guys.
Yeah, and we're on Twitter. You can join us there. And don't forget to write us at pgttcm@gmail.com, and you can contact us at pgttcm.com, and that gets to me at another email. And everything, yeah.
Yay.
So thank you again.
Oh, yeah. And contact us for where to send a self-addressed stamped envelope so that you can get some stickers.
Yeah. And thanks again for joining us, and remember to stay squiggly
and keep it weird.
Yep.